It's time for Jedi Alliance. Today we are going to be reviewing Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad, written by Christy Golden. Make sure you stay tuned, because this is a hell of a read. We'll see you right after the break.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Jedi Alliance.
Hello everybody and welcome back to Jedi Alliance. The squad is back, not entirely.
Not fully.
But we're here.
Yeah.
We were off last week because team member Alexis was getting married. Boy, it was a beautiful ceremony.
It was lovely.
It was Lord of the Rings based, so not exactly sci-fi, but hey, it was still very, very nerdy.
Yes.
And we had a good time. But we're back. A lot of news has happened over the past couple of weeks, and we're not talking about a lick of it.
Any of it.
Nope. Next week, we're going to be back with a regular news-filled episode, including something that came out today. Apparently, Matt Lanter revealed that Galen Merrick, Starkiller from Force Unleashed, was almost a part of Star Wars Rebels. Almost.
What?
But we're not talking about that today. Actually, no. Before we talk about what we're talking about, let's talk about who we are. I'm the Internet's Mark B. Donica. You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. Joined as always by Michael Young.
Hey, guys. You can find me online at One Youngster, which is O-N-E-Y-O-U-N-G-S-T-A.
And Alexis Torres is still off on her wedding
trek
celebration, yeah. I suppose. They were in the East Coast. They're traveling back. If you didn't know that she got married, make sure to go to atorres890 on Twitter and give her best wishes. Her and frequent contributor to the show, Neil, have tied the knot. It's an absolutely beautiful moment. But today, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking about Battlefront Inferno Squad, which lets us familiarizes us with Iden Versio and the other members of Inferno Squad, their first couple of missions. To be perfectly honest, I'm surprised how quick I got done with it.
Yeah, it seemed like it would have been longer.
Mm-hmm.
But it, because you know I do the audiobook, and yeah. I kind of rolled through it.
How do you know how long the whole thing was? Because
10.
Okay.
I want to say like 10 and a half hours, I think.
Because Thrawn was 16.
Yeah.
So
that Thrawn was boss. And I'm in Will Huff now.
You're doing Will Huff? Okay.
Yeah.
So this book, if you're getting the I was going to say paperback, but if you're getting the hardcover, if you're getting the physical version, it is 304 pages or 307 pages. It's a little over 300 pages. So that's about 2.5 hours. Well, no, 3 hours and 20 minutes per 100 pages, which is an interesting way to look at it. I really enjoyed it.
You did?
I enjoyed it.
I hate it. No, just playing. Oh,
yo.
It wasn't what I expected, but I ended up really liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because, of course, with the name like Inferno Squad, and of course them kind of like fighting back after, or my idea was that they were going to be coming back after the Rebels, after the Death Star, you know, fallen. I thought it was going to be kind of like one of those, like, you know, Inferno, like burn everything in your path. You know, kill every rebel you can find, you know, torture them all, beat them all.
Glass the planet, you know, completely
like
erase
kind of
any idea of anything that was there previously and move
so
on.
So I didn't get that.
No.
But,
now,
but I enjoyed it. I was like, wow, okay.
Before we get into major specifics and spoilers, I suppose, if you are interested, it's just as a sort of summary of the book, it is... it follows Iden Versio and her squad on the creation of Inferno Squad, as well as their first couple of missions, one of which is a major infiltration of a subset of,
a subset of what used to be Saw Gerrera's team?
I was going to say like insurgents, because they're not necessarily considered rebels.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an ongoing conversation.
They're the more dangerous rebels. Like the rebels are like, all right, we're fighting back. And these guys are like, we take no prisoners kind of stuff.
Kill everybody.
Yeah.
And oh boy, we'll talk about that.
Yes.
But so it's them infiltrating the sort of last remnants of Saw Gerrera. According to the front of the book, one of my favorite things about the new canon of books is if you don't get, and I don't know if you know this, Michael, they have a timeline in the front of it that shows you where the books takes place. And this, it takes place in between A New Hope and Return of the, or I'm sorry, in between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, so yeah, we don't get
or
that.
During.
They don't say it. And they don't say it in the like in the beginning of the audio.
Yeah, they just but you can kind of get the idea because Iden is stationed at the Death Star, and they talk about Alderaan being destroyed, and she is one of the few survivors of the original of the first Death Star. So that's sort of where it starts, but once they start getting into the missions, you don't know how much time has passed in between, so if that doesn't sell you. I don't know what will, but if you're looking to play Battlefront 2, I wouldn't say this is essential reading, but this will enhance. I think this will enhance your experience.
Out. Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we? But I will say though that this cover is very misleading.
Because that cover was what.
Shout out to our iTunes listeners.
That cover is what gave me the impression that like this book is going to be nothing but hunting down, killing every rebel in your path. Burning all of their information, torturing anyone in their way, you know, all of that stuff. And I was like, I am ready for this. And I didn't get that, but I did get a book that I liked.
Didn't get that. Super light. Now, for those of you listening to us on iTunes, if you're not familiar with the book, the cover has the four members of Inferno Squad with Iden standing front and center facing a burnt out, blown up town with a red Imperial flag on fire.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes.
Amazing imagery. And the special edition cover is Iden in her TIE fighter pilot attire, but it's sort of like the poster that we got.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just that, but that's the cover of the book. And I think it's the cover of the special edition of the game itself as well, just for that sort of branding. But yeah, it shows some sort of big battle that never takes place in the book. So that's a little bit of false advertising. Thomas Coates in the chat is saying, I love the fact that the audiobook is done by the same person that does the voice in the game. 100%.
Janina, all right, I'll just say this before we even get started. Hashtag don't tell my wife.
Hashtag don't tell my wife.
Janina's voice is very easy to listen to. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. And she does a great job with switching her voice up. And the actual vocal acting in this, like there's the scene where she, I guess maybe we should wait, but there's a scene that she pulls off vocally where I'm like, man, like I'm believing her now. like is she really turning?
Is it the one near the end? Oh, okay. That scene. Okay. One of my favorite things is in the, do you get the special thanks like they had, like the authors have in the front?
No.
This book is dedicated to the real Inferno Squad, and then Christy then thanks the character and then the actor that portrays that character in the game, who reached out to me with such enthusiasm to learn more about this book and about Iden Versio, a character we have both come to love and admire. Saying, especially Janina Gavankar.
Yeah.
Hashtag don't tell my wife. But she looked great at EA Play. Anyway.
She was easy on the eyes.
Yeah, she was rocking a beautiful dress. Good for her. And oh, no, but dude, also she had the Inferno Squad earrings, which were metal as hell. Okay, so for those of you who do not, it's going to be happening. Those of you who don't want to be spoiled on some of the plot stuff of Inferno Squad, this is where we're going to start getting into the actual review. So go read the book, check out the book. One of my things that I love when we do book reviews, Michael, is the fact that you do the audiobook, I do the written word, so that we can compare. Like the stories have different impacts that way. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my favorite things about the new book review is how you tend to enjoy them versus how I tend to enjoy them. So again, if you're about to tune out, thank you for checking out Jedi Alliance. We will be back next episode with a whole bunch of news and whole bunch of stuff.
Entertainment Weekly, a whole bunch of stuff.
So yeah, I visited Disneyland and got to see they opened up the back trail where Galaxy's Edge is going, the entrances to Galaxy's Edge are. Okay. So I'll talk about that next week.
Great.
But now we are going to be talking Inferno Squad, by Christy Golden. Hoo boy.
Yes,
nice. One of my favorite things about it is we are we reviewed Catalyst on the show.
Yeah.
And that's a story from a father's perspective where you get to learn a little bit more about the daughter. And so here we have the Imperial side of that. That is another father-daughter higher up in the military, yeah, inheriting the father's will, sort of a thing. But they flip it. It's like, yeah, it's the same ingredients, but they made a completely different dish. And we're not sponsored, but that would have been an amazing transition.
That would have been an amazing transition for Blue Apron.
Blue Apron. BlueApron.com/Jedi. BlueApron.com/Jedi. 3 free meals. But what did you think about the play? What did you think about the Versio family?
I really liked it. It made sense for what she had to do. Mm-hmm. And it kind of tugged at you a little bit, especially towards the end when he reveals to her something about her mother.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, she comes up in this military family and it's very, you know, it's very believable. I'm sure that, you know, we all know a military family, you know, it's like, hey, his dad's been in the military. His dad was in the military. His dad, you know, and it's kind of like being a company man. It's like, you know, we've always been a military family, you know.
Yeah.
Mom does what she can for the military. He or she might be in the military as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just what they do. And they see the Empire or the military as kind of like their standard of excellence and how high you can get in the ranks that you hold as their standards of excellence. And there's a very nice parallel with real life in that. And I think they play it off extremely well in, you know, how she's kind of like, you know, my father's always like this. He doesn't give, you know, he doesn't give me the notification or the love or the affection that I need, but I'm okay because I'm supposed to be okay.
And she understands what certain things mean.
Yeah.
How, like, again, near the end of the book where, for the first time in the entire novel, instead of going Captain Versio, referring to her in official military regard, he refers to her as Aiden. Yeah. And she immediately goes, okay, that's not good. He never calls me Aiden anymore. But I loved the relationship and the build to when they're undercover with the Dreamers, how they keep going back to, every lie has an ounce of truth in it, or every lie has some truth in it.
Yeah.
And when she needs to show that she is not with the Empire anymore, she talks about how she hates her father.
Yeah.
And you can tell that is...
There's a whole lot of truth in that scene. And she really... She gives it... At the point where she turns against the Empire, she really gives a great vocal performance. And in that sequence, she gives a great vocal performance as well. Where, you know, she's just like, you know, I hate my father, his precious empire, and this is how I wanted to get back at him. And it was moving. And I mean, I'm, you know, at work listening to this, and I was just like, wow, she is really killing it right now. But it's a great sequence, and it's convincing to the listener, and it makes sense that would be convincing to, I cannot think of his name.
What, the mentor?
Yeah, the mentor. Yeah.
Who, like, okay. All right.
I love that relationship.
Well, not just the relationship. I like the reveal and how the tease that was going throughout the entire book. I'm going to try not to start at the end just because, but we end up meeting our whole team.
Yeah.
We've got Sin Marana, and the only reason I know that is it Sin?
Yeah.
It's okay, Sin. Good. Yeah. Because I was pronouncing it Sane, because in my head, and then when they had mentioned, they had talked a story about Galen Erso, they're really trying to sell Galen as a regular first name in the Empire. said, had a daughter that pronounced it similarly I was like, oh, okay, yeah. It's Sin, not Sane. Then we had Del Mico, who's our, or I should say, Sin was our linguist.
Yeah.
She has a photographic memory, and she can see something once and remember it forever, which comes back real sad.
Real sad.
Del Mico, who is our tech droid guy.
Yeah.
Crap. What was the, I forget the, it's like a TD-10. The little spider droid?
The droid that stays with him?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. What is the name of that droid? I can't remember.
I want to say it's TD-10.
Yeah, we'll just... In the chat, if you guys know, let us know.
Yeah, if you read along. It's been a couple of weeks. You better have read.
Yeah. But I think it's TD-10, but I'm not sure.
I know it's something
10. I just love how he was... And I guess we'll get into that later when they
well,
get...
Well, no, go ahead.
But I love how... He even, well, they all kind of fell, they all almost went native, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was believable. It's kind of like you saw it coming, but you were like, okay, this makes sense.
With Del, it was the most believable because he seemed the most laid back. If there was any character that I thought I would like, that I thought I could like more than they were trying to get us to really be invested in Iden, which I, coming out of this book even more so. It would be Del because he seems to be the most relatable out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I let my underlings, my team laugh, crack jokes, make sarcastic quips, stuff like that. To quote, let somebody do that shows how just come on the Empire.
Yeah.
And then our flyboy Gideon Hask, who friend with Iden since the Academy.
Might have had a little something back in the day.
Or just friends? Who knows? Yeah. But he's sort of like a little more of a Han Solo type.
Yeah, kind of like a
snide.
Flash and flare.
Yeah.
He's kind of, you know, he always knows he's like maybe not the smartest in the room, but definitely the slyest in the room. And I enjoyed him because he played a good counterpart to Iden's character and how she felt. And, you know, she would say, like, you know, how he always had a certain smile or he always knew how to, like, make her laugh or, like, want to laugh. You know, like, those kind of things. So she needed someone to make her feel, I guess maybe, and I know this sounds weird, but human, you know, because she's so, you know, just military. And she has someone that she can feel, I guess, normal around.
Yeah.
So I think... Gideon was really good. Sin, in the book, they play Sin very well. Her voice, you feel bad for her.
You've got to. Yeah. Well, Sin, they didn't go into it too much, but Sin is a character who had an accelerated course, graduated a year before she had to, 20 years old out of the academy, is unheard of, and she looks really young on top of that.
Yeah.
So that coupled with... What comes with that is not fitting in, you know, being the outcast and not and having her hollow screen. You know, they talk about how whether on these missions that they had to go through undercover with the Dreamers, like, is she ready for this? Is she okay with this? Because she spends most of her time in front of a screen. And in their first mission as Inferno Squad, having to be this prim and proper up in a dress sort of a thing. The first line of chapter 5 is, I really dislike dresses. Like walking in heels and crap where Gideon's like, whatever, I'm a playboy.
Yeah,
but
like, I got this.
Yeah. So you can understand where she's coming from very well. It's a character type that they didn't have to go into too much.
Yeah.
That they went with, oh, you're familiar with this type of a person. Now let's just play with it. What was I totally cut you off and I feel like a jerk.
Oh
but
no!
What was the voice? How was it played?
She was played like she was young. Like she even had a young sounding voice. Mm. But the cool thing is that she always understood her purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, yes, I know I'm young, but I'm here to do this, and I'm okay with that.
I have a job to do.
Yeah, and she fit in well because people kind of started to treat her sort. Well, I guess in the vocal version, sort of like a little sister. Mm-hmm. And they kind of like took her on and she kind of performed her duties. But when she got to, when we got to the Dreamers is when she, her character really shined. Because, well, I guess when she met, the Twi'lek name, who is
Donna?
Me. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So when she met her is when her character started to really open up to me. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. This is important because she has to now play something and kind of act a certain way. Mm. And I think it started to rub off on her. And for everyone who I'll like get to in the end, it changed their perspective. I think I'll say that. Yeah. And I think that's the best way to say it.
Yeah. I really liked Sin's character progression throughout. I liked everybody's inner monologue. We were talking about Gideon. I liked how by writing a character that was close to Aiden from a young age, we could, and Aiden being so straightforward and militaristic, yeah, and goal-based, like, let's get this result, having somebody to be like, oh, this is just like her, or this isn't like her, so that, yeah, we would still have that perspective, mm-hmm, but it wouldn't fit into her, like, having doubts because, yeah, of this, that, or the other thing. Oh, I just realized we're not in space. anyway, so, yeah, I really liked Gideon's point of view when it came to being able to learn more about Aiden. Now, let's talk about the first mission. Okay. The first mission that they had was they had to infiltrate the wedding of Moff Jakun Pariz, who lived in this lavish palatial estate.
Yeah.
This is essentially like The Godfather, where it was his daughter's wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got to make sure you trust everybody coming in. But it was a really it was a fun way to learn more about what everybody's best at. And Aiden being in command didn't necessarily mean that she had to be front and center. And actually, her identity of being this well-known Imperial soldier came into play a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about this is we get to see her kind of playing herself in Sin and Gideon. Kind of, I guess Sin and Gideon kind of doing the, like, this is me, like, I get to be myself kind of situation. And it was good to see their first mission pretty much go smooth.
Yeah.
You know, they had a slight almost hiccup with the tech? They had a slight hiccup, and I can't remember what it was now. But for the first mission was pretty smooth. Mm-hmm. I remember Aiden talking about how, you know, something could have been done better, but for the most part, they talk to the guy, they get into the library, the library has the information they need, everybody's happy,
yeah,
you know, we come back, and it's pretty much a great mission, until their second mission, but their first mission...
Oh,
Go ahead.
The only hiccup that they had was they thought that the thing was going to be in the safe, but there was nothing in the safe valuables and like a holo vid, like a family holo vid. So then they had to search the photo that covered the safe for the chip with all of the information that they needed.
And then they got the chip and it was like extremely small. I think they say it's as small as a thumbnail or something like that. So it's definitely a small piece of tech, but you know, they got in and out and everything was cool and nobody was really the wiser.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you kind of need that for your first mission. Especially Aiden needed that for her first mission.
Yeah.
Because I think Aiden's story in this book is all about getting everything you want and figuring out maybe it wasn't as cool as you thought it was. So it was good. She needed this, as far as her character's progression, she needed this, you know, mission to kind of go smooth for the most part.
Definitely. It was the second mission that did not go too well.
They had found out
that one of the partisans, which was like the the name that they gave the extremist rebels.
Yeah.
Sort of along the line of Saw Gerrera, where they gave them a there was a Celestin named Bach that was like wanted out. Told this Imperial informant like, no, I'll give you information. I can't do this anymore. So they sent Gideon out as just a crackshot pilot. Found out that, or it was supposed to be a one-on-one meeting. Bach comes with like 5 people.
Yeah.
And is like, no, you've got to get me and my girl out too.
And it's like, what? Who are these people?
Both of us are nothing. The droid sees that they're all wearing this big sort of druid, and they find out that it's all explosive.
Yep.
They're essentially wearing live grenades or like explosive vests or sort of a thing where if
they are really living this life. And like, boy, they go, every time they go out, they go with these vests.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just imagining the stress of every time I leave to, you know, anything to go to like the store or go to get parts or go, you know, to fix the car or whatever, I wear this vest, you know, and every day could be my last, as well as say the immediate, say 20 people around me or something like that.
Yeah. Depending how many people are there, what other things they have, may have set up, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just crazy. So, instead of everything goes a little bit crazy. Where is it?
There ends up being a small explosion. A wee explosion that everybody kind of like in the underground knows about.
Yeah. But they end up getting the information that they needed, but they end up using the explosives to essentially torch the bar and kill a lot of the people that were there, including some Imperials. Like it was just sort of, since they essentially don't exist anymore.
They're not Imperials. They're not rebels. They're kind of on their own, especially unless they contact the Admiral specifically.
Yeah. Which, given any sort of a group like this, you don't want to do, cause that could compromise everything. Cause everyone's listening to every transmission.
Yes.
But as a result, they after this mission, they find out, we got a good mission, we got a bad mission, now we got some long-term undercover work.
Yeah.
The main sect of these partisans, which I really like, they call themselves the Dreamers.
Yes.
Now, there's a little bit of an inconsistency here. Well, how could they call themselves the Dreamers, which I assume is, well, which as viewers we take as reference to Saw Gerrera's line, as the cave is crumbling down, like, and Jeddah is being destroyed, save the rebellion,
save the dream,
save the dream. The dream.
So
they're the Dreamers.
Yeah.
Now, unless that's his line.
Yeah, unless he always says that, we're not sure they know about it.
Like, did they land it on, oh, yeah, we're the Dreamers because we dream of it? Like, they never explained it?
We're Saw Gerrera's dream, or we are the dream of Saw Gerrera.
We have the dream of a free galaxy.
Yeah.
Or something. They never gave context for it.
So I guess they were expecting us to sort of just play catch up and just be like, hey, this is what it is.
Whatever, they're the Dreamers.
Yeah, they're the Dreamers.
Whatever, they got leather jackets and everything. Members only jackets and everything. But that's when the long-term stuff happens, where Syn ends up posing as a slave so that she can be rescued by this group and taken there separately.
Yes.
And then Del and Gideon become, quote,
they play
brothers.
Yeah.
Where their ship gets taken over by one of the suppliers of the group, and so they get taken to there, and then
it's a smart plan.
No, you can't put them all there together.
Yeah, it's a very smart plan how the Admiral kind of like planned it out and, you know, set it up for them, because they actually all did end up there. Mm-hmm. Even though I was wondering, I was like, man, maybe Aiden won't end up there. And I'm like, well, I guess he's got to. But it was definitely the long con.
You have to be like, you can't just show up and say, hey, are you looking for some recruits? Like, no, you've got to. They documented their backstories. It's like you have to memorize who you are, what role you're playing. I found it. It's easier that way, but I found it interesting that they all went by their real names.
Yeah.
Now, if this was a movie, it probably would have been a lot easier to give them code names or different names, but because it's a book,
it would have been confusing.
It would have been confusing if it was like, "Hey, Jerry." Dell wasn't pleased by being called Jerry. You know, like something like that. That sort of stuff. You can't do that.
Wasn't pleased by being called Jerry.
I don't know why Jerry's my go-to, but
because he got divorced recently, and you know, life isn't good for him, and he can't see his kids, and every time the wind blows, they call him a loser.
Wow.
Little Rick and Morty for you guys.
Oh, that Jerry.
We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. We're gonna go watch Rick and Morty. Wow. Okay.
But back to Battlefront.
Getting to learn about these characters in a non-imperial setting. One of the things that I liked about this, and the whole thing about Battlefront 2, is we're finally getting to see from a staunchly imperial perspective what the galaxy is like, and seeing the reaction to people going, just even saying the word hope, and them going, hope is for the hopeless, or
they say something like that. It's kind of like a scoff remark to it, but I do like that when they finally all get there, they start to realize, because of course, you know, when you're fighting a war, you don't get to realize that, you know, these are just normal people. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they're fighting for what they want, but these are just normal people too. Like, I could see myself being a friend to this person, or I could see this person being a father role, which the mentor sort of becomes.
Yeah. The mentor becomes that for Aiden. Actually encouraging for her to improve a skill and not making it as a part of life or death. And hey, if you don't do this, you're putting the family name through the mud. Speaking of that, because I wanted to bring it on back. So Aiden's part is that she's herself. She gets to be Aiden Versio because she already has a well-known family lineage. She survived the Death Star. She's one of a handful of Imperials that survived the attack on the first Death Star. So she's assigned to a Star Destroyer and starts making regular friendships. And one of my favorite things about this book is that we got introduced to characters and descriptions of characters. We're like, oh, okay, another supporting character. Yeah. And then after like 5 or 6 pages, we never see or hear from them again. Ever. Like when Inferno Squad is first stationed on their new ship, they're introduced to the captain and co-captain. They're like, why can't we fly our own thing? It's like, well, sometimes you won't be able to. They're being paid. This is all fine. Don't you worry about that. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Maybe we'll get to see an additional point of view, a non-imperial point of view, when it's just a job and this, that, the other thing that might change their horizons. Never seen or heard from again.
Never. It's like they just disappear. And speaking about the Death Star real quick, I do like the perspective of some, like a random person in a TIE fighter at that time. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, hey, why are these guys flying down here? It's stupid.
Mm-hmm. Like, why haven't they sent like the big capital ships?
Yeah. And why are these X-Wings going down there? Like, don't they know it's murder? That's dumb. You know, and because from their position, they haven't been told about this.
Yeah.
You know, now, of course, Darth Vader knows. So you see, and even she says, like, hey, Vader's taking out some people to go down there? This is, what's going on?
And that's person, weird.
Yeah, and she can't get a response and everything. So that was interesting to see that they wouldn't even let them know something that serious. But I guess they can't let you know that we are vulnerable like this. And of course, they probably, no one can make that shot.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, No one.
The rebels yeah. said it themselves.
Like, you know, no one should have been able to make that shot. Is, you know, but of course we have Luke, mm-hmm. and you know he had a little force help. So, but you know, I guess it was interesting to see how her and probably other pilots were like, "What are they doing down there? Like, yeah. why are they? That's stupid." Yeah, well, you know, nobody's saying anything, so whatever.
Actually, now that you bring it up, I kind of want to go back to Lost Stars. And go over the first Death Star part, just so that can get a little bit more perspective on who, what, where. Because if I remember correctly, Thane was in the air as well.
Oh, okay.
So I think Thane was in the air, in the air, for the first Death Star battle. I'm pretty sure. And got away somehow. Either way, yeah, regardless, we're not talking about that book, but yes. if you want to hear us talking about Lost Stars, go and watch our Lost Stars episode, because, man, was that fun. Hoo boy. So, with this, Aiden ends up, quote, befriending some person that falls in love with her, because who can't? but, Aiden, was this the scene that you were talking about? Her impassioned plea of, I remember Alderaan,
That was, she really killed it in that point. And I was just like, man, she is really giving it her all. Matter of fact, I should have brought that audio piece. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, listeners. I should have brought that audio piece for you guys. That's my fault. But she really, you know, because she makes you believe it. Because even though we know the plan, when she goes into it, I'm like, hold on, is this real, or is she,
exactly.
is she
here, I got
pretending?
It. So it's a Tarvin Lareka on the determination. They end up meeting in the bar. They're throwing back, well, sipping back a couple of beers. just concerned, like, hey, you don't look like yourself. Are you okay? He's like, what are you doing in 2 hours? Let's meet in 2 hours, but you know,
yeah,
the whole thing. I can't imagine how strange it must have been to survive that. I don't think anyone can. I can't stop thinking about it. I can't stop seeing Alderaan either. She lifted dark eyes to his. Tarvin, we shouldn't have done it. Tarvin froze in his seat, his heart thudding rapidly. Go on, he said. Like, I mean, the rebel base? Fine. Destroy the rebels, the rebellion, and the criminals. They brought everything on themselves. But an entire planet? Her voice rose, and Tarvin placed a hand on hers to remind her to speak quietly. She didn't pull away. A lot of hostile, dangerous rebels died that day. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of other people did, too. People who didn't agree with the rebellion. People who maybe even didn't know what was going on. Children, resources, animals, plants found nowhere else in the galaxy, all for a display of power. And now we're hunting those few who are off-world for no reason other than that they've had the misfortune of surviving the death of everyone they loved. I mean,
the way she delivers it, because she kind of like draws you in, and you're wondering, hold on, is this real, or is she making a play for the traitor kind of thing? And you know, it's one of those situations where she's got a point, and she's using the some truth inside of a lie. But I didn't keep her stuff close to the vest, but I do believe
it is a skin tight vest. That is real close.
It's best, but I do believe that she believed a lot of what she was saying, because, you know, from a military standpoint, regardless of how much you believe the Empire is right, you've got to be sitting around thinking, you know what? A lot of normal people died A planet has, let's say their planet had a couple billion people. Let's say it had, I don't know, 2 billion people.
Sure.
All of them were not hardened, battle-ready rebels. Some of them are just like regular, like the guy that works at the shoe store. Mm-hmm. You know, the woman that's like the bank manager. The auto mechanic that, you know, just normal people. So regardless of how hardcore you are for the Empire, I'm guessing some of them had to figure, you know, maybe this was a little too much. You know, was this too far? I mean, I know we can't speak about it in an open setting, but, you know, just thinking to themselves, like, was this too much? You know, because that's a whole planet that's now gone. Mm-hmm. And
a culture, everything.
Like, cultures, everything. And I mean, who knows if, and I know people might not want to hear this, but if it was like Naboo, you also have people underwater. So maybe they had another civilization, or maybe like an aboriginal civilization in the forest or something. So you have, like, you've done away with so much just to say, just to say that you can.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that had to have gotten to her at least a little bit the way she delivered it. But it was a very powerful delivery, and you believed it.
Well, you especially for fans who are reading the books, the written expanded universe, we've experienced this moment already in Thane Kyrell. In Lost Stars, we've experienced Imperials going, hold on a minute, this is not okay.
Yeah, this is.
And then
are we just killing all whole planets now?
Wait, are we the baddies? Are we the bad guys? Shucks, sort of a thing. But this leads to her getting instead of killed, her father arranges so that she's just sent back to her home planet and is kept under military watch.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is all part of the plan.
Of course, to be broken out. And...
Yeah, yeah. Broken out by... And so the whole point of this, one of my favorite things about this from a story perspective is the fact that it shows how much the Empire does know. Because sometimes you think, wow, how stupid. How did they not get this? How do they let these plans fall through? How do they do this and that and this? Whereas the higher up you go, the more people tend to know the truth and are willing to accept that they are in control of giant anthills, and it's okay if a whole bunch of ants die as long as they stay up top.
Yeah. And it's sad, but the Admiral is very, he's just very matter of fact about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And until we get to the end where you see a little bit of his, you know, emotion come out. But I'm thinking when it comes to the Dreamers, when it comes to Aiden, I think, you know, we have a situation where she always wanted this. And then when she finally got it, when they go on that mission where they're supposed to, you know, kill school children and everything, you know, she finds out, maybe I don't want this. Maybe this wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. You know, and there's a lot of times when you're like, you want something your whole life. And then when you get it, you're like, you know what? It wasn't what I thought it was. Yeah. Like, you know, this whole leadership thing was great until someone like dies under your watch. You know,
that happens, but we'll get there.
Sorry. we'll get there.
I mean, but luckily we've had a couple people tune in and go, oh, I'm not done reading yet, and then tune out. So good. We are talking about the whole book. In terms of how far the Empire has planned, they know that if they put Aiden in this situation, that they're going to want to use her and her turning over a new leaf as a voice of hope to get other people ruled by the Empire to switch over. And they were exactly right.
Yeah.
They break her from Vardos, her home planet, so we get to hear a little bit more about her backstory personally. I didn't even finish my thought from before, but I'll finish this one, and then I'll go back to it. But she ends up getting broken out and brought to the Dreamers, where she sees that Gideon, Del, and Sin have all accomplished, and they're all together back in with the Dreamers. One of the things that I was mentioning earlier about seeing things from the Empire's perspective is very rarely, unless they're on a mission, do they reference other alien races. Or if they do, it's not necessarily like an epithet, but it's, you know, instead of referring to Donna as Donna, some people refer to her as the Twi'lek.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like, it's almost like they're, anyone who isn't human to the Empire is kind of like just a number.
Because some of the people just refer to humans and non-humans.
Yeah.
Or human-like.
Yeah.
instead of using, oh, well, this is what species that person is. So it sort of very lightly continues to imply the institutional racism that is in the Empire, yeah. Which they don't do it overtly, like, oh, here's a race that I don't like, scum, yeah. This, that, the other thing.
They kind of just, like, slide it in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you're not looking for it, you'll miss it.
It can be a little uncomfortable too because it sounds normalized.
Yeah,
normalize institutional racism.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, the whole Empire is just like, hey, we're better, and except in small cases like Thrawn, where it's like you can't deny that. It's like, this guy is like probably one of the smartest guys in the room at any given time. Like, even, like, he doesn't even flinch in the eyes of, like, the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but, you know, it's interesting to see how, I guess, they just, like, wrote off anyone who's non-human, and it's so casual, I guess, yeah. You could say. I think that's, it's just casual to them.
And the thing about Thrawn is, he was humanoid.
Yeah.
So that could have, like...
That did help, sort of.
Like, God, he didn't weird.
Yeah, it's, oh, man, the... Yeah, we're not. Yeah, because then when you get into the idiosyncrasies of institute, yeah, it's yeah, we can't handle that on this show.
No,
it's a lot to handle.
No,
in Star Wars, it's a lot to handle.
Though I will say, if we were to handle it, and we have talked about it before on the show, I would really want to get John Roca back in here because it is one of the things that he is very passionate about.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to John Roca.
Flipping love John Roca.
I hope you read this book, John Roca. You better read this book. No.
The man is busy.
Yeah, he's a little busy. But,
quote, all the belts. so, okay, now where am I here? So here we are at the thing, blah, blah, blah. So when we meet all of the members of the Dreamers,
yeah.
We've got folks from all around the galaxy, as well as... It was really interesting that the quote leader Staven is just a dude with blue hair. Like, I thought, yeah, it was,
but
like,
he's like beautiful, but he has blue hair, and he like dyed it that way. He's like, I want to be cool.
I just want to have some blue hair.
Yeah,
I just want to be a cool guy. You see.
And another thing I like about the Dreamers is how they've hidden themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone to is it a moon or a planet? But I think
I think
it's a moon on the dark side of it, or dark side of the planet.
I think because they said dark side of, our brains naturally go to dark side of the moon.
Yeah.
Just because of culture.
It stays.
The shadow side.
And it stays dark for like, I don't know, however many days or whatever. It's just like dark half of the year or something like that.
And the dawn and dusk cycles, which the planet Geosen, how do they pronounce it? Because they only said it like three times.
I want to say it's Geosen, yeah.
Okay. The dawn and dusk cycles, which the planet was currently experiencing, lasted about 3 months. We live in a narrow band of the planet's dusk, which is temperate.
It's very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And even the fact that, you know, they're already used to the darkness is very interesting. And it's smart for someone like the Dreamers to be that hardcore, to go to those lengths to be hidden, because they know, you know, the Empire is very vast and huge, and the only way they can fight back is by being that hidden.
And all of the crystals and the various faunas and sediments and stuff.
Yeah.
Jam sensors, so they can't be found. It's one of those things where you can't be found unless you know where it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very cool.
Let's just say we're not overly concerned with Imperial discovery. Yeah. but one of the things that it seems to happen with almost every book is that reading it, you're like, man, I wish I could see this.
Yeah,
because it would be beautiful, especially some of the stuff where people go exploring in various parts of this ancient civilization that, mm-hmm. or not even civilization, but this ancient planet that has remnants of civilization, remnants of culture,
yeah.
remnants of something, but like no like mass graves, no this, no that, which is very weird and not necessarily yeah. touched upon until the very end. The
very end.
Last couple of pages. But like with the mentor and Aiden in that amphitheater, which yeah. is the first like, wait a minute, how can there just be an amphitheater somewhere yeah. like this? Or when Sin and I forget his name.
The young boy that she
Sardos?
Hold on,
I'll get there. Sidori.
Yeah. And I know he's young, but she kind of falls for him a little bit. She's feeling it. He puts the game on her. He puts the game down.
Well, she even says descriptive, like, he's a physical specimen, but yeah. hey, I'm on a mission.
But she's like, but I'm on a mission, okay? Yeah. Look, pump your brakes. I'm on a mission. And the fact that the mission that they end up going on, what ends up happening, it does kind of, you know, it breaks her heart. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see how close they've become, because they are part of this team. You know, it's your basic deep cover mission where they go so deep that it's like, well, I'm one of these guys now. You know, am I really an Imperial anymore? I mean, yeah, because that's why I'm here. But, you know, I'm having a fun time with these guys. I'm eating with these people. I'm, you know, drinking with these people.
Yeah, they
I'm
brought that
hanging
up.
Out. And, you know, it really does show how they humanize and realize, like, maybe the rebels aren't as bad in like black and white as we thought they were.
And that varies from crew member or from squad yeah, member to yeah. squad member because of who they hang out with. Because yeah. Aiden is with the mentor most of the time. And he's like, I've seen so much violence, so much bloodshed. I don't.
And he's been on both sides.
I don't like how violent Staven is. I don't like how we just kill indiscriminately. And I think that perspective is very important for Aiden to see, even mm-hmm. though that doesn't necessarily affect her, because by the end of it, she's like, well, look at what good it did. Because when they were trying to save Imperial lives, when Sin was trying to save Imperial lives, 400 Imperial students were at the risk of getting bombed in order yeah. to take out a Moff and senior yeah. lieutenant or something like that. And Sin, I think, did the right thing by yeah. timing it so that the children would escape. A lot of the dignitaries and adults would still be in there, but 400 children, you know, that yeah. goes back to what Aiden was saying back on the Star Destroyer of, these are innocent people. They have yep. nothing to do. But she echoed the words of her father. They are the children of our enemies. They can grow up to become yep. our enemies.
And she even remembers that when mm-hmm. he, you know, and it's that, you know, gamble that you play with all of your choices of which one wins out. And, you know, these are just regular children. Like, I mean, yes, they are Imperial children, but I mean, are they, you know, is it their fault? What's going on, and how much blame do they carry, and is it fair to attack them? Mm-hmm. That's the weird situation that you're in. I'm glad that she timed it, but then that also rooted her out as, of course, being an Imperial.
But that was the evidence to
well,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so seeing everybody connect with the various people on as a part of the Dreamers, did you expect anybody to slip? Did you expect anybody to reveal themselves more than somebody else?
I knew somebody would end up slipping. I thought it would probably end up being like one of like Gideon or something like that, because he's so flash and flare.
Yeah, arrogant he could let something go.
Yeah, I thought he would let something go. But I watched so much stuff like deep cover stuff and like CIA stuff and whatever. So I figured someone's going to have to die. in this mission.
Yeah.
Like, I, like once they decided this was going to be a deep cover, I was like, someone's got to die. I know that's mean, guys.
Well,
but
no, you're familiar with the, with this form of media, and yeah. I always get sucked into thinking about who it might be, this person, that person, the other person, and then after it, I always remember it's the person you least suspect
yeah.
to do it, because I thought because of how they've been how they had been presenting Del throughout the book of being
okay.
a little yeah. bit more carefree, and he was
yeah Del would have been a good one because he wasn't Del was one of those people that were Imperials kind of just because like he never really came off like imperialism yeah like he was just like hey man you know I'm in the Empire you know I'm good at tech stuff you know I'm here. You know, I mean, he doesn't seem like he really bought into the, like, the Empire is the best thing since sliced bread kind of thing. He was just like, hey, you know, I'm part of the Empire. I'm good at tech stuff.
It allows him to do his work.
Yeah, it allows me to do my work, and that's it.
Well, and the fact that he was paired with Pikal, or is that how it was pronounced?
Yeah.
Pikal?
Yeah, and they were able to find, like, the little, I guess, machines.
The civilization.
Yeah, the civilization. And I guess they were, like, ceramic machines or something mm-hmm. like that, but... He seemed to be more kind of like, hey, you know, I work for the Empire, but I'm not like, you know, I'm not like, I don't have like Empire posters in my house and
yeah.
Empire slippers and the Empire well, like, belt.
He understands everything that the Empire is. He doesn't have a problem with it. So yeah. he is a willing participant in what the Empire is and is all about.
True.
But he's a guy that looks for loopholes.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when it came to Pikal, he was like, hey, we could find use for him.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have to die.
He's kind of a regular guy. He's not a threat. You know, he's because I mean like what is it? Staven. Staven.
It's like Steven but stupid.
He's a threat. But, you know, like, you know, Pikal is a regular guy.
He's an old dude
yeah.
who is essentially is recovering from radiation poisoning.
Yeah,
who doesn't have a lot of time yeah, left.
They even say he doesn't have too much time left.
Like they're noted, like patches of hair are missing, and
yeah, he's like
walks with assistance of a walking stick.
Yeah, he's like Geppetto of like the Star Wars.
What a pull!
Oh boy, yeah. Inferno Squad.
Yeah, so. For me, I thought it would have been Del, but when it comes to her, looking through the book again for a thing I don't want to anyway.
But yeah, I was thinking Gideon because I thought that would have meant more to Iden. That's why I was thinking. But it ended up that the youngest member meant more because of what she went through, what she confessed to Iden as far as being able to see the moment over and over.
That was so sad.
Yeah, and he kissed her before he left.
So yeah, the fact that she has a that she has a photographic mm-hmm. memory allows her to not forget that.
Yeah, and for the memory to never fade.
Sin waved a hand to silence her. Shut up. Just shut up. You, Del, Gideon, you'll forget what you've seen eventually. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, but time will soften it and it'll lose some of its punch. You'll forget some of the details, but I won't. I can't. Sudden sympathetic horror filled Iden as she understood what the younger girl was trying to say.
Yeah.
Satan had an eidetic memory, photographic memory. So the moment of somebody that you may not necessarily have a confirmed I love this person or yeah. a connection with, but at least somebody that you don't know how you felt about them. Yeah. That could be even worse.
You hadn't figured it out yet.
No.
Because she was like, you know, he looks good. He likes me. If he wasn't a rebel, this probably would be a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But since he's not, I got to figure out how I feel. Can I feel a certain way about him? And she might have even had those feelings like Del, kind of like, well, maybe I can turn him. Maybe he can be an Imperial and everything.
I don't even think she. I don't even think she had a. She didn't have all of. I think all of those thoughts came at the very, very, very last minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Like right when the kiss happened.
Yeah, I just realized we've been going for quite some time. Oh my God.
Because this book is cool. This book definitely is cool, guys.
Yeah. So she ends up setting the bomb to be 15 minutes instead of 5 minutes so that the children can escape. When the bomb doesn't go off, Sidori's like, yo, no, and goes and makes sure that it goes off without a hitch and ends up killing a lot more people than was intended.
Yes.
Or than Sin intended. And in hearing Paikau and Donna speak in Paikau's native language, which is a very difficult language, she
just kind of says that, like, you know, she's speaking in his native tongue or whatever. I don't think they actually perform it, but I'll have to go back and check that part because I'll probably end up reading this book again or listening to this book again. But it really picks up in this mission. And you learn who these people are in this mission, and it means a lot. It really means a lot to the story, especially to the end of it, because we almost are on a race to the end after that explosion happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sad to lose Sin. It was sad to lose.
Well, especially her trying to make sure that the mission continued by essentially killing herself.
Yeah.
By grabbing the arm and saying, no, don't! And then pulling it into her and...
Yeah.
So that sort of accelerated things to, like, all right, we got to get the intel that we need now. The dreamers start to implode, and we find out that the mentor we've been trying to figure, or that we have been led to believe that the mentor is somebody who's lived through all of these, who through since the Clone Wars, the Separatists, everything.
Yeah.
Was a figure. Did you, the way that they presented it, did you expect it to be somebody that we knew?
No. I never thought it would be someone, especially someone that had that deep a connection in the Empire.
Well, they also,
I mean, like, you have like a daughter, well, or a stepdaughter in the Empire.
But also somebody that kept referring to Saw and Steela very, very affectionately.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, he's definitely put in his time, and he definitely, you know, has earned his position, I guess, by due to his relationships with the Empire. I mean, not with the Empire, but with the Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... You got to give him respect. And I think Aiden gave him that respect by... They even say that her gun was on stun... And, you know, he ended up killing himself. And,
or did he?
Oh, yeah. Or yeah,
that's the thing, right. Is they left it ambivalent. And
right.
Paikau's condition is left ambivalent. As far as we know,
yeah, right.
Everybody was left for dead. Boom, you don't know. There were a lot of ships in that wreckage.
True.
Now, the name Lux Bonteri was familiar.
Yes.
And then just full transparency, I finished this book right before we went on the air. So I had a lot to deal with in like 5 minutes. But so now I want to go back and watch all of the stuff from Clone Wars with him and see where he started versus how he ended up. Now, the book ends with Inferno Squad going on their next mission to blackmail a Moff on a distant planet in a distant system. We don't have a replacement for Sin.
No.
And there are still, like, 5 years? No, there's still some time in between the ending of this book and when the game will begin. But now, knowing what we know about Aiden and Inferno Squad, what are you most excited for the story of Battlefront 2?
I want another mission with these guys, and, you know, to be able to play these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they'll, you know, now that the book, I'm sure we'll learn, because I haven't been following the game as much as the book, but just to play these guys and also use their strengths, like, you know, having Dell have like some kind of robotic, you know, extension or arm.
We've seen the droid be a part of
Aiden's.
And then,
like, you know, Gideon having a cool ship. And then Aiden having, like, you know, everything on 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that would be cool. Especially when it comes, and also to refer back to this book every now and then during their story, during their kind of like story campaign mode. Mm-hmm.
At least one line of dialogue. Especially
with how far they drove home the family issue with her mom and everything. Like, really, you know, go back to that maybe once or so.
Or also, the fact that now we, one of the first things that we see from story mode is that they watch the second Death Star explode. Now yeah. knowing that Aiden survived the first Death Star, that makes that hit a little bit more. And wondering what her not again moment is, and knowing everything that came as a result of the first Death Star, first Death Star's explosion, for her personally, and knowing what can happen now, especially after reading this book, it makes me feel that her determination is that much more justified and that much more intense because we know the immediate ramifications of
yeah.
her story. And I'm beyond excited to yeah. hear these characters. And I'm jealous that you got to hear them for 10 hours. But gotta say, thank you for everybody who paid attention and was here for this review of Inferno Squad.
Yes, yes.
People who aren't watching live and coming back to this later, make sure to give Christy Golden your best. She is a wonderful author. She also did Dark Disciple, if you haven't read Dark Disciple.
And that's great as well. Check that one out.
Read Dark Disciple. We're going to be doing some more as Battlefront 2 comes closer this fall, working on some fun stuff and hope that we're going to be getting more for you, the viewer. So, until then and until next week, which is going to be a huge news blowout, Michael, where can the folks find you? What are you working on?
You can find me online at Wonyongsta, which is O-N-E-Y-O-U-N-G-S-T-A. And you can find me on YouTube daily, posting all kinds of nerd content and good stuff like Star Wars, like Rick and Morty, like Cannon Busters, like Cowboy Bebop, whatever. And just search Nerd Soul, one word, NERD SOUL, on Black Hollywood Live.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica. If you're a fan of video games, please check out Inventory Full. It is Mondays on the Popcorn Talk Network. Follow them on Twitter at Inventory Full PT. It is our video game culture show. I'll talk a little bit about this tomorrow night's show. We are weekly. We're also going to be talking about the Overwatch World Cup, which happened over the weekend. One of our hosts was there. But next week, so much news. You won't be yes. able to handle it, but yeah. we'll be here. Same time, same place, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you so much because Sin died to bring us this information.
Yes, she did.
Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.